What's up, Disrupt Nation? So we have a very, very special guest for you today on the Disrupt Podcast. He is a social media influencer, digital strategist, and the owner and CEO of Avon Media, a social media marketing agency based out of Germany, my very good friend, Arian Ney. Arian, thank you so much for being on the show.
Anthony, thank you so much for this kind introduction. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you've worked with tons of brand names like Gerard Adams, Gary Vaynerchuk, Jay Shetty, and many, many more. You've worked with brands like Manolo Blahnik and Hennessy. And you've really built like one of the biggest digital marketing agencies in Europe over the last 5 years. And you're super young. You're only 22. So tell us a little bit more about like how'd you get started?
Oh, that's quite a good question. So when I first started, I studied like international management at one of the most demanding universities back here in Germany. And when I started studying there, I felt like it was a very competitive kind of university, and I was missing my creative outlet. So that's when I started like getting into social media myself. And after a while, out of the demand of my clients, I started the company because they were always asking me, hey, can you do what you're doing also for our company? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And so I started getting into like shootings, and that's when the company really started. But I think what's way more valuable is the fact that the root of everything is like a lot lies in my childhood, like me having an immigrant Persian mother here in Germany. We got bullied a lot. We got insulted a lot. We got sent like people told us to like go back to Iran and weird things like that. I think that was really like kind of gave me the hunger and the spirit to like actually do something, make something out of myself. And I remember the husband after my father was an alcoholic. So like I had a very, very like dark childhood. But it was really that negative energy, like observing that negative energy, which let me realize that there is so much energy in my life. And even though it might have been in the wrong direction, I realized there was energy. And then I basically took it, did some Tai Chi and like shifted it into the right direction.
Wow, that's amazing. That's such an interesting perspective because, you know, here in the United States, we think of, you know, discrimination, and we think only of discrimination against like maybe Mexicans, right? And we wouldn't think like in Europe, if you're from Persia and then, or your mom's from Persia and you move to Germany, that there would be, I guess, racism and some sort of like anti-immigration there as well. Like a Persian in the United States is just like a white guy. A white guy with a tan, right? A little bit, right?
So, yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about like that animosity growing up and what that was like for you.
It's very interesting because like I stayed in New York for 3 months, right, with you and Gerard and the founder's family where you worked back in the days. And I realized that in the United States, racism is more so geared towards your ethnicity, whereas in Germany it's more so of your nationality sometimes, which is very interesting. And for my mother and I, it was really just like her having black hair, which stood out in Germany, and her not being able to properly communicate with like perfect German language. Damn, we faced a lot of animosity. Like I remember once my mom, so my parents got divorced, and so my mom was living alone with me, and she was trying to get a new apartment for her and I, and she was making like enough money to pay the apartment. But then I remember we were in a bathroom with the real estate broker, and my mom was like, yeah, I really like the apartment, but I don't really like the bathtub. Like it's not that clean, it's not that modern. And then the real estate agent was like, well, if you don't like it, fucking go back to Iran. We don't need you here in our country. Like that's the kind of shit. Like that, and that's like and I was like standing down. I was like 15 years old. I was like, what the hell did he just say? Like, did he just say that?
And like, oh, that's a little extra, man.
No, and like you would think that like that's that happens like once in a blue moon, Like, I got things like that more often. When I was a child, I remember there was a super, super rich, successful family. They're into like solar energy in Bonn, Germany. And I was invited to one of the rich kids' birthday party, right? So this was my big thing. Like, I was like finally felt accepted in like a bigger peer when I was younger. Yeah. So I remember this rich kid coming up to me and he would like somebody threw a bottle of beer at him and he thought it was me, which wasn't the case. And so he like fully went at me and he said the same things. He was like, "We don't need you Persian motherfuckers here in our country." And I was like, excuse me for that bad language, but like citing him. And I was like, I was so upset. I like started crying. I was like, what the hell did I do to deserve this? It was like literally just like pure racism. And yeah, like unfortunately, I think it's a thing in every nation still. Like I didn't think it was a thing in the United States until I was there and I had a black Uber driver who was literally being harassed by a policeman simply for the fact that he was being black. Then here in Germany, I experienced it through my mother and I being half Iranian. And then my girlfriend lives in London and I experienced it there towards Indian people as she's half Indian. So like, yeah, it's still a thing. It's still a thing.
Yeah, I think people, it's almost like a childish sort of part of someone's personality. And then they grow up and some people kind of grow out of it and other people don't, right? But just hearing you describe it from childhood and then describe it again to adulthood, it really is just like this, hey, you can't sit with us. Hey, your hair is a different color. Your skin's a different color. It's really this super childish, non-intellectual way of thinking and looking at the world, right?
100%, yeah.
And it's sort of like bullying, right? It's like this kind of bullying, like, oh, you know, this kid shouldn't get candy because his hair or skin's a different color. And then certain people grow up and they don't grow out of that and they actually make that a part of their personality. So I think it's definitely something that as time goes by and as consciousness and people are more focused on like mindset and things like that, I think people will grow out of it culturally. But it really is just like a childish, immature way of thinking.
But you know, like I'm extremely thankful for it happening to me because it helped me mature and grow up so much faster than people that weren't in such situations. Like I had to step up for my mother. I had to step up for myself. I had to like fight an uphill battle, you know? And that's like what really made me mature really quickly. And you said, now I'm 22. Well, I have employees that are older than me, but they still respect me because my age isn't in line with my level of maturity. Like I'm way more mature than my age actually is. And that's why it was horrible. But like, as mentioned, like this negative energy let me show how much energy there is in general. And if that would have never happened to me and I would have lived like an average Joe life, I don't think I would have like grown that fast, you know, that quickly.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the sayings that people say is without the darkness, you can't appreciate the light.
100%, right? Yeah.
So you have these moments of adversity, these moments of struggle, and then when things are going well, you appreciate them that much more. And you have like Eric Thomas says this, like that dog on your back that's just like, no, well, you can't give up. You have to keep going. You don't want to go backwards. You don't want to go back to, you know, maybe that place where you were getting bullied. Oh, I have to be successful to prove people wrong, or I have to, whatever that is for you. It's a, you know, that voice might be a little bit different for other people. But it's that dog on your back that's constantly pushing you to like go harder and go harder. So and I think a lot of the most influential people do have some sort of backstory. You know, Steve Jobs was adopted and there was just a lot of you know, Mark Zuckerberg like almost got thrown out of school, and it, you know, having that those kind of checkered pasts gives you fuel to the fire to like kind of keep going.
100%. No, I totally agree.
All right. So you're in school and you're going to school, but you're not really being engaged in school. It kind of feels like this rat race of all these kids in academia. And you get into social media marketing and you get into Instagram. And now you grow this account. When we met, you were working on this account that had grown up to 300,000 followers. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So the way everything happened, right? So I was really like, I was okay in school. I was always like smarter than the average student. And at one point, like I had very bad grades in school, right? Because of all the things that I saw at home. I saw violence, I saw alcohol abuse, not from my father, but the husband afterwards. And therefore, like I lived all that out in high school until I was like 16. And I read a book called Investment Punk, which is from a German author. And he talked about like life, success, and all that stuff. And that book kind of shifted my mind and let me like aim towards a more successful life. Back then, I didn't know what success meant. So for me, back then, it was money. So with 16, I decided to become a millionaire, which was funny enough. And then I started like getting better in school. And I achieved above average grades. I started studying law. While I was
Hang on, back that up for a second. Yeah. So you said at 16 you decided to become a millionaire.
Yeah.
I made so that's that reminds me of I don't know if you met him at Founders, David Bayer.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the coach, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I ended up going to his event back in January, and he actually spoke about that as a mindset hack, was just deciding things, right? Yeah. You don't have to figure out how you're gonna do it, you don't have to figure out anything. It's just like you make the decision, and from the moment you make the decision, then you start living into it. So you're 16 and you decide you want to be a millionaire, and at that time, were you making any money?
No, I'm still not a millionaire, but I am a millionaire. Like that's the way I always went about it. I always said I'm a millionaire. It doesn't matter how much money I have on my bank account right now.
I just didn't earn the $1 million yet, but exactly. I'm a millionaire.
Like I'm basically on a track curve of becoming a millionaire, but it doesn't matter how much money I have on my bank account right in a moment. Like it's my biggest manifestation. I know it will come true, and I'm on a very good way to get there. So it's I know it will happen. I always knew it would happen and will happen.
That's awesome. It's like Jim Carrey had wrote himself that $5 million check, right? And just walked around with it.
I love it.
And
yeah.
And then a few years later, he did Dumb and Dumber. And I think the check was $10 million. So it was even more than he imagined. And David Bayer. So he makes the decision that he's going to marry a beautiful Brazilian woman. Right.
Yeah.
And he's never met her yet. But he's just like, oh, no, Colombian. I'm sorry. If his wife is listening to this, I apologize. She's going to kill me. But but so he makes the decision. I'm going to marry a beautiful Colombian woman. And a month later, he meets her and she's so not into him. And they're just talking at a bar and it's a couple of friends and they're being friendly. And she says, oh, I'm going to be in Colombia next month. If you're ever in Colombia, look me up. And I'll show you around. So he says, okay. So the next month comes by, he books a ticket to Colombia. And when he gets there, he calls her. He says, hey, I'm here in Colombia. You invited me. And she's like, I didn't invite you. I was just being friendly. But he decided that he was going to marry her. And it was just amazing. And they actually started the company together, the whole consulting David Bayer coaching company. And now it's 5 years later, and he actually proposed to her on stage in front of everybody, in front of over 1,000 people. It was amazing. And it was all based on that decision. He decided he was going to marry a beautiful Hispanic woman, and she decided that she was going to marry a Tony Robbins talking guy. So when she got together with him, she helped turn him into who he is today.
Oh, wow.
And he was just committed to loving her so much that anything that she wanted, he was able to do. And they built this company together, and they show the first mastermind that they did 5 years ago. And it was like 7 people in a room. And we're in this auditorium with over 1,000 people. And one guy gets up and he's like, yeah, I was there, but it was only 7 people in a library. Yeah. Oh, it was so crazy,
no
you
way.
Know? Yeah, but it all goes back to the decision, right? You decide, hey, this is where I'm going, and I'll figure out, you know, the directions on the way there. So I love that at such a young age, 16 years old, you're like, I decided I'm going to be a millionaire, and then you start living into that legacy.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's how it started out. And I feel like many people talk about manifestations and they like talk about all that, but they don't really believe in it, and that's why I think it doesn't work for many people. And it's quite simple for me. Like, there was never a doubt. And see, the thing is, if you don't doubt yourself saying that, there won't be anybody else doubting you when you say it. Like, if I tell somebody that's my dream, that's what I'll become by the age of 23, everybody's like, oh, you're not already? I'm like, no, I'm not already, but like, I will be. And like, it's like, no, nobody would ever doubt, because I have so much conviction what I say myself, you know? But if you doubt it yourself, it won't work.
Well, yeah, and I think you touched on another great point. It's like, people are going to doubt you. No one is going to believe in your vision except you. And even when it comes to fruition, there's people that will still see what they want to see in you. So, you know, when I told my mother I was going to start a school, a coding school in Puerto Rico, she looked at me like I was crazy. Mm. And she didn't tell me no or don't do it, because she does want to be supportive. But you can kind of see the look in their eyes like, are you sure? Is this really my son? Right. Mm. And I'm sure you've probably experienced some of that yourself with your parents.
100%. Yeah. So my mama, we are Iranians, and going back to the whole racism thing, yes, us Iranians, who are really let's say we want our kids to be doctors or lawyers. So that was the case with my mom. And I studied law while I was in high school. So everything was set for me to be an amazing lawyer, and I couldn't talk very well. So she was assuming that I was getting a lawyer. And then I said I would get into that. And was the best business school. It took her a long time to accept that at first, but then she found out it was actually the best business school in Germany. Then she got fine with it. But then I did my bachelor degrees, and she was assuming that I would now like enter a job with like 80,000 first year payment or something. But I just started my own company doing social media, and she didn't even know what social media really was. And so yeah, that was the same thing. And I remember 2 months ago, I had a call with my mom, and she was like, yes, everything fine with you. Do you need money? I'm like, no, mom, everything's fine. Do you need money? Like, she was like, still like, Arid, are you sure you don't want to take a proper job? I'm like, mom, like, I have employees sitting in my office right now. They're working for me. That's the proper jobs I'm giving to you. Like, we good. Like, we good. So yeah, it's like, but I love it, because like the only reason why she was acting that way is because she wanted the best for me. And from what she knows, like her brother is an architect. She thinks that those kind of jobs are the safest way and the best way for you. So she really just wants the best for me. So I never blame her for it. But sometimes it is the best to like leave your parents a bit like unknowing. I think that's fine. At least that's why that I did it. My mom doesn't know exactly what I'm doing. She's right now visiting me in Berlin, and we just went to lunch and everything. I showed her around. I showed her the office, and she was like, are these people on your payroll? I'm like, yeah, like it's all good. Like, she will find out sooner than later. And like, I want to let results speak for it, rather than like make big announcements and then not be able to live up to it. Cause my mom always taught me this one sentence, and it goes from Latin. It goes acta non verba, which means act, don't talk. And ever since,
I love that. Yeah, ever since, I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, if I would ever get a tattoo, like that would probably it.
No, that's really, really great, because, you know, so manifestation is good. Putting things out into the universe is good. But the other thing that you want to avoid is just being all talk and like no action. And I feel like there's a little bit of that in the information economy as well. Like, I think it's great that we have all these books and these podcasts and these online courses and things of that nature. I think they're great. But I do think people need to be willing to fail and be willing to try things and be willing to work instead of just talking and learning and consuming content.
Yeah. Most importantly, they have to execute. I feel like entrepreneurship got a religion rather than like the actual thing. Like, I see so many people being into entrepreneurship, but they are not doing entrepreneurship. Like, it's insane. Like, people love
no, totally.
People like put entrepreneurship on a pedestal, They look up to Gary Vaynerchuk and people like Gerard maybe, and they're like, oh, these people are so cool, but like they don't want to actually like do something themselves, which I mean, it's cool. It's like, and it's like looking up to a rock star, but like, hey, like when is the moment you're actually doing something yourself?
Well, and I think with the whole social media revolution, like they think entrepreneurship is taking selfies in front of a fancy car.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, like that's the result. Like that's what happens after 10 years of entrepreneurship, you know. But they think entrepreneurship is just that. And then like, you know, all I have to do if I want to be a successful entrepreneur is like rent a Ferrari and take a picture in front of it. And it's like, oh, cool, I made it, you know? And it's like, yeah, no, that's what you do after you've already, like, put in the work. Like, me, I find, like, when I don't put on when I don't post on social media, it's like I had a good week. It was just like, oh, I was so busy. I was grinding so hard. Oh, damn, I forgot to post on social media. And those are usually my most productive weeks. Like, if you see me posting on social all day and all night, chances are I'm not getting any work done. Like, that must be a really slow week. I must have lost a client or something.
Yeah.
Because if you have that much time, you know, you're probably not executing.
Well, yeah, that might absolutely be the case. Or in my case, we have a digital marketing agency, so we do social media for clients. So therefore, I kind of have to be on top of social media so they see that I can do what I preach, basically. So with me, it's like I do social media, but not because I want to show off or brag or anything like that. I'm using it as a marketing tool. And what people get wrong is I'm trying to portray my lifestyle, which is not the case. Like I'm showing literally the life I live. I'm not like renting anything. I'm not going to a restaurant that I can't afford. I'm just living literally my life, and I'm advertising for my company, and I'm basically showing so that my clients see, all right, everything's going good with this guy. Like, all right, he's working more than the average person, and after work he can afford to like eat in a nicer restaurant than the average person. I can trust him with my money. You know, that's like the kind of deal. Like, it's not like I'm fictioning it just to like appear cool on social media. I couldn't give less of a shit. And that's why I also deleted my Instagram account.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, just one thing I don't want to step over. So one of the good things about your agency and hiring a social media agency in general is that now you can allow business people who are running their business to just focus on that. And now we're talking about like established organizations who are making, seven figures and above. It allows them to outsource their social media, and then they can just focus on working hard. And now they can hire a company like yours to help them communicate with their customers.
Exactly.
So I don't want to like step over social media and say, oh, social media is for kids or something like that. It's an incredible tool that can be used to not only generate new business, but also maintain old business and stay in the mind of your existing customers. But now, so let's talk about your Instagram account. So you grew it up to 300,000 followers, and now all of a sudden you sent me a request a few months back, and I saw your account, it was like 200 people. So what happened? You deleted your account. Why did you delete your account, and tell us more about that?
Sure. So I started social media, well, basically Instagram, like 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, I didn't start it with any intention. I was literally on holidays. And I was realizing, as mentioned, that in university, I was missing out on my creative outlet. So therefore, I wanted to do something which was more creative again. So I started my Instagram account. And back in the days, there was like follow, unfollow, and bots like that weren't a thing. Like, I was like one of the first movers to even find out about it. And I found a so this is a bit getting tech savvy, but I will quickly mention it. So I found a programmer that was able to basically, through proxies and shit, enable me to basically hardcore use those follow-unfollow tactics. Usually Instagram would deactivate your account after a certain amount of actions, but I found a way to like basically cheat around that. So by doing that and also buying some followers, in full honesty and transparency, that's how I grew my first 100,000 followers. And that was in the first year. And then the 3 years afterwards, I continued growing my Instagram account, which was organically, but that was through collaborations with big entrepreneurs that I knew, like Gerard, like Gary Vaynerchuk, like Circus, like Fam Mirza, people like that. And with that happening, and first of all, in the back, yeah.
Hang on. So let's back up to the first 100K, because I think there's tons of people on this podcast, myself included, that want to figure out like how do you get to the first 100K? Because I think that is sort of a milestone. I think once you get past the first 100K, then it's easier to do those collaborations with other influencers. It's easier to get other micro influencers to want to follow you and engage with you and things of that nature. So the first 100K, you have an automation software that's running. And you find kind of the secret sauce in how to run some automation and kind of game the system while still being below the radar. So tell us a little bit more about that. Like, how did that work?
Sure. So, but that was like 4 years ago. Keep that in mind, right? So now.
So the game has changed a lot.
Oh, you can't do that anymore. No, you can't. I was like right in the exact right moment. Like I was lucky enough. Or I'm lucky enough to be granted with this opportunity. I basically looked up everything about the Instagram algorithms. I looked up every growth opportunity. And then I went a step further and I wasn't satisfied with like what Instagram was giving me. I felt like in terms of tech, they were not giving me a lot of information and abilities to grow. So I partnered up with a coder, basically somebody I could like that was very tech savvy that understood all the background information of it, you know? And he went out of his way to like look into programming, reprogramming those follow on follow bots and whatnot, so he would make them more efficient. But basically the way I did it was basically fake. It wasn't a genuine way of growing my account. So that was how I grew my first 100,000 followers 4 years ago. And that's 100% and most definitely not the way I would recommend people to do it. And we will get into like the way I felt about it and everything later. But yeah, that was how I started.
But it's still, I mean, respect where it's due, it did open up a lot of doors for you. It did allow you to meet a lot of influencers and really kind of build your company and have some social proof to show prospective clients. So, you know, good or bad or ugly or black hat or not. I mean, I've been in digital marketing for like the last 10 years and, you know, there were tons of things people used to do to game the search algorithms, right? To game Google and SEO and all of those things. And, you know, some of them were white hat, some of them were black hat, and some of them, we would call them gray hat, right? Like things that are sort of in the middle, like not technically against the rules, but Google probably doesn't want you to do that, you know. And at the end of the day, man, everyone does it. You know, when I hear people talk down on people for like buying followers, you know, it came out that a bunch of musicians like Beyonce and all these really high profile musicians, they were all buying views on YouTube because a new video would come out and they don't want a Beyonce video to have less than 1 million views. So a new video will come out and instantly they would buy 1 million views so that at a minimum that video would have 1 million views. And then there was a huge crackdown on it. This came out a while back and a lot of views of top celebrities and musicians went down. And a similar scandal came out with BMW. BMW was doing something with SEO, how they were building their links, something that was shady. And then Google cracked down on them, and all of a sudden BMW's website started ranking lower. So, you know, it is kind of all part of the game. There's ups and downs. What worked 4 years ago is not going to work this year. But I kind of hear in you there was like an emotional part of you that felt like you didn't earn it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was exactly what you described. It was like this gray hat. It was not allowed. It was just like my way of tricking myself into it. But it's so interesting that you're saying that, because I talk to so many mentors, companies, agencies about exactly what I did. And all of them said the same thing. They're just like, it's fine, don't worry about it. Everybody's doing it, you know? But I decided for myself that only because everybody's doing it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. And therefore, I made that decision because I was feeling how this was making me more and more unhappy. I was growing numbers, but like I was preaching authenticity and entrepreneurship through my social media. And I was telling clients how to basically operate their social media, but I would have acted in a different way. And if you don't align your actions with your convictions, with your values, you will get an extremely, extremely unhappy person. And that's what happened to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, practice what you preach, right? Like, you're out there and you're preaching authenticity and the right way to do it, because you know in your mind that's the right way to do it. But then in the back of your mind, you're thinking about how you got started and how, you know, how you ran bots kind of in the beginning.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, that was definitely a crossroads. So now, where do you get to the point? What is the bridge where you decide, you know what, I'm actually going to shut my account down? Because that's I had no idea what happened. I was thinking in the back of my mind, I'm like, did he sell his account, or did it get shut down? God forbid, like, you were running a bot and they shut it down. So talk about, like, what was that breaking point, and why did you close down the account?
Actually, it was interesting because I got offered, I had many offers of people wanting to buy it and everything, and I wanted to delete it for like almost a year. And I remember the time also where I was a mentee of Gerard Adams. I also was a time where I realized like that social media is not necessarily always the best thing for you. How it can like put additional pressure onto you, whereas in reality it should take away pressure, right? And it was like a year of like back and forth. And there is something called imposter syndrome, right? It's a psychological pattern where individuals start doubting their own accomplishments because of like the fear of being exposed as fraud. And that was, I think, something that I had and didn't know. Like, I was basically kind of making out as if my whole success in life and everything I've accomplished and achieved was basically being reliant on that one Instagram account. And so therefore I was very scared to delete it. And I was, of course, scared of the backlash of what people would say and everything. And it was up until this one night, I remember it was 3 a.m. I was on a phone call with my girlfriend, and I was simply just like, it was finally the point where I didn't have any collaborations running, right? So with this Instagram account, of course, like, I gave up on a six-figure business. Like, keep that in mind as well, because I was running so many collaborations and like...
Well, yeah, you had like collaborations with like a lot of top brands, right?
I had like literally the top brands that nobody can work with, like LVMH. So that's like Louis Vuitton, Dom Perignon, Veuve Clicquot, Hennessy Whiskey, Montblanc, all those kind of brands that are like top tier, they work with me. So therefore, I was basically giving up on a lot of money. But it was just this one moment where I was like, Ari, like, you have to be totally honest to yourself. Like, is this something you stand for, yes or no? And I said no to myself. So without any warning or any like telling people where to follow me now, and without like inactivating the account, I literally just took it off. I deleted it. And that was it. That was the decision. It felt like an incredible relief right afterwards. Then the week after was hell, because I was feeling like I was stolen my biggest, like, it was my proof of concept. It was my social proof, right? I was feeling like I was stolen my identity. But then afterwards, it was up until, I remember when I started speaking to all the people, mentors, clients again, how much they respected me. And I remember, maybe you know Xerxes, XX, a good friend of Gerard and mine. I brought him out to Germany to speak at an event of a mentor of mine, and I told him the story, and he respected me so much for it. And he said, Arian, there is a difference. There's influence and there's influence. Some people might be called an influencer simply because of the fact that they have a large following on social media, but you are an influencer. Mm-hmm. You can influence people with the words you say. And it was that moment when I realized, yeah, like, my biggest asset was never my Instagram account. My biggest asset was always me, myself. And that was really when I gained back all my self-confidence and when I realized everything's fine.
Absolutely. So at Disrupt, we actually have our five characteristics of a disruptor. It's kind of like our five brand values. And the first one is influence, and this is how we define it. So the people who participate in our programs at Disrupt create the following results for themselves, their careers, and their lives. And number one is influence, being someone who challenges the status quo and creates shifts in our culture. More than just how many followers you have on social media, you will learn how to use your digital voice to create change in the universe and inspire other people to do the same.
Yeah.
So again, here's the thing that I say about quote-unquote influencers. If you have a million followers, but all you're doing with those followers is holding up the status quo, you're telling people to drive Ferraris. That's nothing new. You're telling people to shop at McDonald's. That's nothing new. Even, you know, I don't want to get you in trouble with any of your brands, but you're telling people to buy Louis Vuitton. Like, that's nothing new.
Yeah, 100%.
So rather than, you know what I mean? So at that point, it's questionable whether or not you're an if you're an influencer for that word, just because you have a lot of followers. If you have a bunch of followers, but you're telling them to do the exact same thing that they're already doing, and you're really propping up the status quo, I really don't see you as an influencer. That's like saying Carson Daly from TRL, right? Carson Daly's not an influencer. You know what I mean? Even like Justin Bieber, I wouldn't necessarily call him an influencer. Is he changing the status quo, or is he just propping it up? You know, does he have people doing things that they weren't going to do otherwise? So I really love that. And I love the fact that when you did delete your account and you did start from scratch, you realized, I guess, who your true friends were, first and foremost, right? And that people you did have influence, and that people actually still did follow you, whether or not you had a bazillion followers, half of them were automated and half of them were organic, right? You know, and the other thing is, with that huge reach, it's like, okay, what are you doing with the reach? And, you know, myself, I'm a little bit older than you. So I've seen the evolution of people who had like a million friends on MySpace. And then the culture shifted to Facebook, and then they had 5,000 friends on Facebook, and now the culture has shifted to Instagram, and now the culture is even shifting to Snapchat. And I actually love Snapchat because they don't show you metrics. They're very big. I just watched an interview with Evan Spiegel, who's the CEO, and we featured it on the Disrupt website. And Evan speaks about how he thinks in the long term, Snapchat is still going to win because people will realize that they don't want to be judged on numbers and metrics. They just want to connect with their friends. And he said, so, you know, Instagram and Snapchat, Instagram and Facebook and Skype and whoever can steal our features, but they can't steal our values. So Instagram is still focused on a public persona of how many followers you have, where Snapchat intentionally isn't. It's intentionally private. And it's meant for you to connect with friends without the pressure of how many followers you have. So I think, you know, to that point, I think what you did was very, very brave. And I think, like you mentioned, in the long run, you're going to realize that that was the right move to make, and it's going to make you invincible to the next social change. Oh, yeah. Because inevitably Instagram is going to stop being cool and something else is going to take over, and when that shift happens, you'll be ready for it. You won't be you know, caught off guard.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And like, it made me be so much closer to my true self. I remember, so I attended a speech of a mentor of mine. He was giving a speech to 3,000 people. His name is Thaddeus Koroma. And after the speech, outside, there were like masses of people. And Xerxes, Double X, and I went outside and we spoke to the people. And there were some of my old followers. So they were taking pictures with me and then taking pictures with X. And then I started talking to one of them. And very quickly, there was like a whole crowd that was like developing around me. Like a circle of people listening, and it was like 10 people, and it was 20, 50, it was like 60 people standing around me, and they were like listening to what I was saying for literally 2 hours. And after 2 hours, this one kid, he raised his hand and he goes like, excuse me, I have a question. I go like, yeah, sure, go ahead. What is it? And he goes, I don't want to be impolite, but who are you? And I remember back, and now listen, this is where it gets interesting. Now, back when I had my Instagram account, the first thing I would have said would have been, just look me up on Instagram, you know? And I would have given him my handle to immediately have that proof of concept, that social proof with my numbers. But instead...
Yeah, just look at the number, right? It doesn't matter who I am. And here's something that I want to point out to you that you may not noticed. Him asking, who are you? Actually implies that you're someone. He's like, by the words that you're saying, I can tell you're someone important, and he's just looking for clarification of who exactly he, ooh, that is that. Right that. But continue.
I love that. And then I was like, well, my name is Arian. And he was like, okay, cool, so where can I find you? And I was like, well, on Instagram. And I was like, I deleted my Instagram account like 5 weeks ago, right? And I was like, so that was like right a week afterwards. So I had, as you said, 200 followers. And I was like, yeah, you can look me up if you want. And I had 198 followers. And I was like, damn, this is like major embarrassing, right? And then he was like, and now listen, and this is what he said. And he goes, now you have 199. And then next guy went, now you have 200. And we ended somewhere at like 215 followers, because all these people get their phones out and they were like, we want to hear more of you. We want to like listen more to what you have to say. And that was when I realized my big numbers never defined me. It was what I was saying in the first place, the person I was being, the values I was standing for. And that was very strong for me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I could totally relate. Like, I've never really amassed like huge six-figure followings, but I've been on a bunch of podcasts. I put videos on YouTube. I put out content. I do put out stuff. I've not been consistent as I'd like, because like I said, a lot of times I get caught up in the weeds actually doing the work. But just the other day, I was on the Dropping Diamonds podcast, and he's telling someone about his show, and he's telling them, hey, you know, I've had on these awesome guests, Anthony Delgado. And the guy stops him and says, wait, Anthony Delgado from Disrupt? And I'm like, and they're in California at the time. And I'm thinking like, how, you know, again, I don't have this big six figure following. I'm like, how the hell does this guy even know who the hell I am? But obviously, you know, so you'd be, well, I say that to say you'd be surprised how your reach travels, right? And we look at like, okay, you have 5,000 followers. If you add up all your social media together, that's 5,000 people. That's like a city. That's like a small town. That's a lot of people. And if you even look at like a newscaster, like, dude, me and you, we're probably more famous than most of the weather girls that are out there, right? Because if you think of the Weather Channel, they're only going to be in one city or a few cities, right? And how many people actually tune in? And now look at the data on television. How many people are watching television versus getting it off their phone, right? So you're probably your reach probably goes a lot deeper than you think, and it's also having the reach in the network,
yeah,
that you want to be in, right? So you're in the social media influencer space, you're in the entrepreneurial and digital marketer and business space, right? And that's not everyone. That's actually a certain caliber of people. We did the demographics on Disrupt, and our average viewer has a medium income salary of over $130,000 a year. Wow. So that person, the viewer that listens to us, the viewer that listens to the type of stuff that we put out, is actually a different caliber of person. So I don't need the whole world to know my name. I want the right people to know my name. And I think that's kind of what it showed you. It's like, okay, now I have these 15 extra people that are following me, right? But these 15 people, they're going to be ride or die. They're going to listen to every word I say. And, you know, they're going to be influenced by the things that I'm putting out. So that's amazing. So I love, that's almost like the organic version of you running the bot. Now, instead of you running the bot, now you are the bot, and you just have this big circle of people and they're hitting the follow button. I love that.
No, I 100% agree. And like going along with that, it's like, yes, I might have deleted my Instagram account, but I still have all them phone numbers in my phone. At the end of the day, I don't think it really matters. Like, it's not about like who knows who. It's about what values you stand for and if you can like reach people with it in the right way to convince them about it. But yeah, like for me, it was like, I still like, if I write a text to the people, they would still listen to me and they would still highly value my opinion. And I can like still reach people that other people would dream of reaching out to. And I can just like invite them to lunch or whatever, or get invited. And I think that's also what shows like you earn respect never by your numbers, because like all of them still respect me. You earn the respect through who you are and what you stand for, I think.
Definitely. Definitely. So we met probably about a year ago. And so tell us a little bit more, like, what was it like moving to Newark, moving to the United States, working with Gerard, working with Founders? What was that whole experience like for you?
It was extremely, extremely, how do you say? Let's say I learned a lot. Not necessarily the way I wanted it to be, but the way it turned out was even greater. So I thought, I was 21 years old at the time. I wanted to learn from a mentor, Gerard Adams, and I found about him through social media, right? And to me, he was portrayed as this perfect person. And I was assuming like, wow, everything he does is perfect and he's extremely happy in life, which he is. He's very happy. Yeah? But like,
no, but it's... There's a difference between the meme of someone that you see online and then you meet them in real life and you're like, oh, wow, this is a real person. Yeah. Like he has to bleed. He has to eat three times a day. He gets sad sometimes. He gets happy other times, you know, and social media, you only see one side of someone. Exactly. So, yeah, tell us more about that difference.
It's interesting because like people always say like you should never meet your own star. Your idol, because of exactly that, like you realize, oh, they're just a human being as well, right? But it was more than that. It's not like it lost magic, but like it completely shifted my perspective. So I started working for him, and I indeed lived with him in his apartment for 3 months as his apprentice, as his mentee, and I was running his personal brand on Instagram and all that, and it was just like such a great time. I learned so much. I saw so many things where I knew like these are things which I would like to adapt. Like I feel like at Founders there was an amazing team spirit. The leadership was at a very high level in terms of skills and also like what was practiced. It's also a very big cultural change between difference between Germany and America, because there like everything is marketed really well. You talk very highly of everything. You like market everything, whereas in Germany it's a bit more conservative. So that really opened my eyes towards that. But like it was also like learning. So on one hand, it was like learning or like copying the good things that I saw. But on the other hand, basically it was seeing the things that I don't want to do in the exact same way. And I don't want to like get into details, but like you can imagine that everybody like does things differently and you don't agree with everything they do. And of course, I also like got to live on a very personal level with Gerard and get to know him like way deeper than other people would. And I was like, this is amazing. This I want to do exactly the same way he did, but this is not the way I want to do it. And so therefore, that was also a learning. So by mentorship, you don't necessarily only learn by seeing what you would like to copy and like do the same thing, but you also learn through, hey, he's doing this way. I would love to do it in a different way. And that goes totally without judging. I'm not saying Gerard did anything wrong or in a way that you shouldn't be doing it. That's up for your own values. And it simply just didn't align necessarily always with my values. And so therefore, that mentorship opportunity was very, very, very interesting for me to learn like, all right, there are different angles to go at things. I want to do them this and that way. And also another big misconception is like when you go into mentorship is spoken so highly about nowadays. I think people imagine you get a mentor, you get a millionaire right away, right? But like you still have to figure out everything yourself. That mentor will not have a lot of time for you. The mentor will want you to save him time by you doing a lot of hard work for him or her. And so therefore, that was my realization. I was like, damn, like mentorship is so different from what I would have expected. But honestly, it was the greatest time of my life. I would never want to change it. And I'm so thankful again, if Jared is ever listening to this, for all the time, effort, and energy he put into me. And also all the people at Founders, including you.
Absolutely. One of the things that kind of struck a chord for me in what you're saying is not only learning from people's success, but also learning from failure, right? And you have to learn from your own failure and the failure of other people, right? So working with such a big organization and a big brand, you get to see the successes, the failures, the triumphs, the tribulations, the hardships, and you learn from all of that. So you learn from what they're doing right, what they could be doing better, and everything in between. And in addition to that, if you're working with a mentor, they're going to want you to fail. I mean, that's one of the things that I encourage my team to do, is to fail. Like, go out, fail, try some things. And then if you bring me a problem, I can give you a solution. But without you actually trying and failing first, it's hard for a mentor or a leader or anyone to really give you any feedback unless you fail. Then again, until you see the things that are going wrong, it's hard to kind of do them right. Another thing, I think your account had originally started as like a meme account. Like, it wasn't a personal brand, right? So what gave you the courage to speak out, become this public figure, start a company, and really turn your entire life into a brand?
Oh, simply like what I was doing before my personal brand, I was simply just like arranging clothing on a floor and like taking pictures of it. Like, that's whack. That's whack as hell. Like, all that fashion Instagram, all that, like, I'm cool Instagram, it's whack. Like, if people are still onto that, like, you're whack. Like, I'm sorry, but like, that's not changing anybody's life. And like, I'm not saying this in a judging way. I'm rather saying that in like, if you're able to amount a mass of 3 million people following you because you do fashion, imagine how much you could do when you would start speaking and you would start like sharing your opinions and thoughts. But maybe that's not made out for everybody. But I, for myself, decided I have a voice. I think that I'm quite a smart cookie. And I went through a lot as a kid. I went through, as we talked about, a lot of adversity. I studied law while in high school. I started at the best university in Germany. I had mentorship opportunity with Jared Adams. I have my own company with 22 years of age. Like, you have to recognize the energy and then the potential that is within you. And that's not being cocky. That's simply acknowledging the hard work that you've put into it in the past years. And that's what I started doing. I was like, I should let people be a part of this, and I should let them learn from my failures, just as we talked about. One of the biggest things that I constantly share with people that follow me on social media now is I talk about my mistakes, my failures, my learnings, so they can basically just shortcut their lives, you know. And that circles back to what you said about leadership. It's about using that digital voice in order to question values that are currently in the society, question things that are currently work in a certain way, and maybe give your own opinion about it, your own perspective, a shift. But how are you going to do that if you're just like some random person that takes up pictures of fucking fashion?
definitely. So talking about failure, like, what was one of your most challenging moments in business, and how did you overcome it?
It's quite interesting, but like, looking back, I always think the biggest mistake was to simply just not start faster, like earlier. Like, when I look back at my career, everything worked out at one point in a certain way, and it was exactly the way it was supposed to. Like, there was never a real feeling of failure. Like, even if I failed at something, so this is a good story. Let me quickly get into that. It might take a minute, but it's a very good one. So 4 years ago, when I got accepted to my university, I had to do an internship. And I found out about this real estate mogul here in Germany called Jakob Mehren. So I applied to his company, the Mehren public publicly listed company to do an internships for sales. And I didn't get accepted. So I called their company, their HR department, and I was like so shook that I didn't get accepted because I had such a good CV and I was like, I'm amazing. Like, why is this not working out, right? And so I wanted to do everything so that it would work. So I called their fucking company, the HR department. I was like, I would like to talk to Mr. Jakob Mehren himself. And they're like, and I introduced myself as Mr. Philip von Hammerstein. So I was like giving them some royal name, right? And they're like, oh, we're sorry. Like, he's not taking phone calls himself. And I was like, well, I have real estate worth millions here in Berlin. And you will be the reason if he doesn't make those millions, if you don't let me talk to him. And then she was like, all right, let me see. It's a crazy story, but like it's 100% true. And so she hung up. She was like, let me see what I can do for you. 10 minutes later, she calls back. I take up the phone and go like, Tim Paul, assistant of Mr. von Hammerstein, how can I assist you? And she was like, yeah, so Mr. Mehren now has time for him. Would you be so kind and forward the phone? And I was literally talking through my t-shirt, like changing my voice. So I would make it look like I was the assistant of somebody else. So I put the speaker down, put it back up, and I'm like, hello, Mr. von Hammerstein. So she hands me over Jakob Mehren, this amazing real estate mogul that I really wanted to talk to, right? And he takes up the phone call, and it was like an extremely, extremely valuable and rare moment. Like, people don't get to talk to him. And on the phone, I was like, I'm sorry for bothering you and taking your time, but my name is Aaron Ney. I'm not Mr. Philip von Hammerstein. I don't have real estate worth millions. I just graduated from high school, but I would love to do an internship at your company. And you know, he was like, wow, I'm so impressed with you. This is insane. And I thought in that moment I was on top of the world, you know? And I thought like, wow, this is amazing. Like, I will surely get this internship. But I didn't end up getting it. And I was very sad. And I was like, why did this not work out? And I was 18 years old. I considered it a failure, right? It was up until 2 years later when I met Jakob again on social media. And I constantly, for 2 years, literally provide him value. And I remember 2 years ago, I wrote him, Jakob, you missed out on the best intern you ever had. Do you know what his answer was? He said, Aaron, sometimes some doors close in order for other doors to open up. And it took me 2 more years to understand what he meant, because now he's a good friend of mine and a very, very high-paying customer in my company.
Wow, that's awesome. So you were going to intern for him. That didn't work out, but you did get his attention and you were definitely on his radar, right, with that tactic. And even though it didn't give you that exact result that you wanted of an internship at the time, it led you later on for him being one of your top clients. That's amazing.
Yep, exactly. And that's honestly like that's the biggest failure, is like to not start earlier, because like this shows everything in the long run will work out the way you want it to work out. If I would have just started earlier, like there might have things that worked out earlier even.
Yeah, definitely. It's like that meme about entrepreneurship where they show the straight line and they're like, what people think entrepreneurship looks like. And then there's the big squiggly crazy line with all the ups and the downs and backwards and forwards, you know, because it really is a journey and there's no right way to do it too. I think that's another misconception that a lot of younger people have, and they get caught up in this. Oh, am I doing it right? Or what's the best way to do it? And yeah, that's definitely a challenge. Okay, cool. What's one message that you would send to all the other entrepreneurs that are out there that that look up to you and are looking to follow in your footsteps?
You are enough. That's my message. You are enough. Because in order to add some clarification, I realized how with social media and everything, we always start comparing ourselves, even with entrepreneurship. We look at our competitors, we look at everybody else, instead of just recognizing the development and the improvements that we did over the past days, years, hours, months, and everything. And so therefore, like, just remember yourself, you are enough. You don't need to compare yourself to others. You don't need to outperform anybody. You are enough.
That's awesome. I love that. So I got two more questions. The first one is, what's next for you and your career and your business?
What's next? So my goal is by 2023 to have the biggest digital marketing agency of Europe. Basically, some sort of like VaynerMedia, but here in Europe. And that's what I'm currently working towards. And it's going good. It's going perfectly fine.
Awesome. Very cool. And last question is, what does disrupt mean to you?
Right. That's a good question. So with this disrupt is basically just like looking at things from another, from a new perspective, and being able to mobilize enough people in order to start a movement, which is going against the traditional, the conservative way, and basically reinventing it towards a more modern and more realistic value.
Definitely, I love that. And for people that want to connect with you, where can people find you?
On Tinder, basically. No, just kidding.
Tinder, swipe right. It's the attractive, tall, German, Ukrainian-looking guy.
No, I'm just kidding. I have a beautiful girlfriend. But if you want to link up, if you want to have a conversation, just like listen to a bit of what I say, you can follow me on Instagram, of course, which is Arian, A-R-I-A-N dot N-E-Y.
Very cool. Arian, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you. I'm so proud of your growth and your progression. And yeah, we have to link up the next time you're in the United States. So don't be a stranger.
Likewise. And if I can take a second, I really have to like give you big props and respect for what you've done. Because like I met you a year ago and like you have developed so much in terms of everything. You look healthier. You're killing it with the company. You have this disrupt, which I see everything. It's like fucking supreme, but like even more vibrant. I love it. Everything you do, Anthony, no, honestly, I'm so happy and I'm respecting you so much for it. Like, please keep killing it. Honestly, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much. And we actually have our upcoming event. It's called Disrupt Puerto Rico. And it's a huge event. We're going to have social media influencers, thought leaders from tech, cryptocurrency, and really some of the greatest minds and movers and shakers in the world. And we're bringing them all to Puerto Rico. And that event is on September 19th. So, Arian, not to put you on the spot, but I would love for you to come and be one of my honored guests and maybe even speak on a panel. So, you know, check your calendar, but if you can make it September 19th, I'd be more than honored. It's going to be on the anniversary of Hurricane Maria. So it's been 1 year later since the hurricane hit the island. You know, the people, they're up to over 90% power. So, you know, the lights are back on, but now it's time to get to work. So we're bringing the smartest people in the world all to one island. And yeah, man, I'd love for you to join us there.
That's a very, very big and mine. I'm very honored by that. Let's talk after the live stream and see how we can make this work.
Yeah, definitely. One of the nice things about Puerto Rico is that unlike, you know, going to other countries, Puerto Rico is part of the United States. So all my friends that are here in the 50 states, you don't need a passport to go to the event. It's really going to be an amazing epic event. The VIP after party is actually going to be on a boat. It's going to be tons of fun. But Arian, I know that you're all the way in Europe. So yeah, we have to check your passport, see if we can get you on a work visa or something to get you out there. But, it's definitely going to be awesome.
Amazing.
But, yeah, Arian, thank you so much, man. Like I said, you're just an inspiration. You're an amazing human being, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me and for doing this. Like, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, talk soon. Disrupt Nation, that's it. It's another episode of Disrupt Podcast, and yeah, we'll see you in Puerto Rico. See you on the island. Peace.